This week on Thingamabob.
The power that Mike Myers wields.
If you buy my lamp, you won't need drugs.
Down at the troll hole. Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Josh.
Well, hello, Brie.
Hello to everybody listening.
And welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme is the 60s.
Ooh.
Hey, mama, welcome to the 60s. I was waiting for you to sing it, but then you didn't.
You know, that wasn't the first thing I thought of.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the first thing you thought of?
I don't know. I just think of space when I think of the 60s.
Space? Because
he went to the moon in 1969. Yeah. Well, yeah. Also, like, there was so much space travel before we even went to the moon.
That's true. Whatever.
I don't know why I think of that.
You have space knowledge and I have musical knowledge. We're all different.
We got, honestly, all the bases covered.
Yeah, we do. That's it. There's only two bases and we have
musical
them both covered.
Musical in space.
Yep. What nice. About a musical in space?
I'm here for it. I'm also here for your rose of this week.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask you. Look at you swooping on in. Okay. That's a lovely shoulder shimmy. Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome.
My rose for the week is a little bit long-winded, but...
nice.
I know. I'm not sure exactly where to start it. I guess I'll... Okay. So I've been wanting to do more acting lately, says the professional actress.
It's hard in this pandemic economy.
It's hard in this pandemic. There was a whole thing where I was like, I'm done with acting, but no, I'm not for a while. And so...
Plot twist.
Exactly. I've been very wishy-washy about it. And lately on my journey through the artist's way, I've been really thinking about how it would be really nice to like pick a monologue and just work on it. But then my inner voice was like, well, what for, Brianna? Like, what are you going to use this monologue for? And I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll just like learn it to have it for future potential auditions. But then our lovely sweet roommate, Erin, is like very well versed in finding like digital theater productions. That's the word I was trying to think of. Digital theater things in the pandemic. And he was working with this guy out in California. And he was like, hey, can you help me run lines on this scene? And I said, sure. So I helped him with his lines. And I was like, this scene is really fun. Like, if this guy is looking for any other actors, let him know that I'm available. Sort of like a very, you know, like you say that and then nobody ever contacts people for you.
But Erin would.
Erin would, and Erin did. Erin sent him my email and was like, hey, my roommate is an actor. She's like really interested in your stuff. If you have anything that you want to send her, let me know and I'll like tell her. And so long story short, this guy did have stuff and he sent it to me and we had like a virtual audition thing on Wednesday that I was very nervous for because to be totally honest, my schedule was very packed and I did not like put a ton of time into prep for this. So I was like, oh God, we'll like see how this goes. And then we met and I did this monologue that he had given to me and it wasn't memorized yet. I just like read it off the thing. And he was like so complimentary, not to pat my own back, but he was so nice about it. And he was like, I think you'd be like great for this monologue. You've got like really great chops. I think you'll tell the story really well. And it felt so good to perform something again, even in like such a small capacity. But we're moving forward. So I'm going to be doing this monologue for his thing. He's putting together like a virtual production, I guess, of all of his different works. And I don't have the details yet. Otherwise, I would promote it. But
yay!
I don't know what it is yet. But yeah, I'm doing like a virtual thing at some point eventually. And I get to do some acting finally after a very long, very long hiatus. So
yay! You can pitch it when it comes up and we can all tune in.
I know.
Yeah. I'll we can all watch this, Brianna act.
Use this platform for evil.
Evil.
No, for good. Just personal gain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's my rose. What's your rose, Josh?
You know, I'm going to do a little switch and do my thorn because it's kind of related to your rose.
Okay.
I did an audition this week too, where I asked for sides. You had to like request sides from this company, and I requested the sides on Wednesday, and they sent me the sides on Thursday at like 3 p.m. and they were due Friday.
Oh, God.
And I have other things to do and not just these sides. Otherwise, maybe I could have done a little better. But I did probably the worst you've ever done.
Oh,
I like made Billy read with me on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm so sorry about this. I don't care anymore. I'm like, clearly this is not going to be good. But I got these like yesterday late afternoon and I had no time to prep them.
I know.
And so it was like, they were fine. They weren't great though. And that's like a problem because you're like, you watch it back and I like stopped halfway through and I was like, I'm just gonna send it.
I mean, that happens fairly frequently in this world where you get sides at like the last minute and you just you do with them what you can.
I know. I tried to make strong choices, but then like part of it looks like unfocused.
Oh, is that the video you sent me?
Oh,
of your strong
no.
choices? That was something else?
That was something else.
Oh, okay.
That was a monologue I've actually performed
for
you. Oh,
no,
before.
You're right. It was. Now that I think, I said that without thinking about the content of the video, it is a monologue that I knew. You're right.
Yeah, it's just because I just did it so differently that time that it probably just felt different or whatever. But
no, I remember watching it. I was like, ah, yes, the cheesecake monologue. I knew I knew what it was. I asked that question without thinking.
I could make choices with that monologue because I have it fully
memorized.
This was me. You're not going to be able to see people listening, but picture me looking down at a piece of paper for 3 minutes straight. It was
incredible
very
work.
And every time I like looked up, I like had to look back down 2 seconds later.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I've got the next couple sentences. Nah.
No.
No.
I mean, that's the benefit. My thing on Wednesday was also not memorized, but I had my computer screen in front of me. So I was just, I was reading it off my computer so I could still like look forwards.
It's fine. That's my thorn. Anyway.
Yeah.
What's your thorn?
My thorn is that the Wi-Fi in this house is unbearably awful. It is so bad. And poor Aaron, I was like, I can't handle anymore this week. You need to call them. And so he did. And he was like, I tried to talk to them. And they said that if you haven't previously filed a complaint, there's nothing they can do to help. It's just so...
That's a paradox.
I know. I was like, I'm sorry. You want people to continuously call you complaining before you fix a problem? That seems counterproductive. So the Wi-Fi is just, it's so bad. I'm currently the only person at home. And it's so bad that like nothing works half the time. Things will not load. Videos will not stream. Our FaceTime cuts in and out because I'm always pausing. It's so bad. And I'm the only person on it. And it's meant to be for like 7 devices or something. So my thorn is the Wi-Fi. And Spectrum is on my hit list. I swear to God.
I thought for sure it was going to get better when I left. Because you're going to have one less person.
Oh, no. No, it got worse. Somehow it got worse.
What is going
on? It's so bad. I don't know.
My Google's unplugged too.
Yeah, no, I know. I have to call them again or like go in person and I don't know, act like a Karen or something.
Oh, because Spectrum is right around the corner.
Spectrum is around the corner. Yeah, so I could actually go in person and talk to somebody, which might be more beneficial than,
that's really annoying,
than talking
though.
To Jeff on the phone at Spectrum.
Jeff, no help at all.
No help at all. You hear that, Jeff? You're on blast.
Yeah, right. You're on my hit list. Anyway, no one's dying. This is all a joke.
Everything's fine. Josh, what's your rose?
Yeah, we'll end on a positive.
Yeah.
My rose is today I had a family BBQ all day. And it was so nice. I got home just before this podcast. it was really nice. I got to play with Molly because Grandma, which is my mom, strategically came an hour after Larry and I did so that I could get a full hour of playtime with Molly.
Yeah, because Molly's and all about that grandma life.
She is so obsessed with grandma that I would not even be there. She'd be nice, you know. Like we play together or whatever, maybe all three of us, but like she's like, grandma, let's go to my room and shut the door. Let's shut everyone out, you know. But
that's kind of sweet, though. Unfortunate for you, but sweet.
You know what? Grandma loves it just as much as she does. So for them to have that bond is really lovely. She gets more time with grandma, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm in New York.
Right. So. You're Gunkle Josh, who only comes for the photos. That's
right,
not true.
I'm her. Not stop. Every Gunkle ever.
Yeah.
I They're immediately the pass her away. No, today we played for a full hour of running because she wanted to play, run from the dinosaurs. And so what we would do is we would sneak outside and we'd be like, are there any dinosaurs? And then she would just randomly go, like pretending to be the dinosaurs.
Oh my God.
And then immediately scream after it. She's like an actress playing multiple characters.
That is so cute.
And then we'd run and scream and we'd go hide. We did that like 25 times.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I just like, I forget that kids can do things over and over and never get bored. I had to change the game, you know?
Yep. Yep.
I had to be like, Molly, because they're in a new house. I had to be like, Molly, show me your room. And then we played hide and seek many times in her room.
Right. Or you have to make it really exciting. You're like, you know what we should do?
Right, right.
Sit and do nothing.
And you can tell me all about your new house.
Exactly. Yeah.
I tried to get her to tell me about all of her things in her room, but she was like, no, I want to pay baby sleeping. Where, like, she acts like a baby because she's about to be four, you know, and she acts like she's one and she's like crying and she just wants to be put to bed. And I'm like, this is a ridiculous thing.
Oh, no.
Like, you're so old. The fact that all you want to do is act like you're younger and crying.
Maybe she's worried about getting a little sibling and she's like, no, I am baby.
Could be.
She is baby.
That's exactly what she says. She says, I'm baby. And your mommy.
I'm baby.
Put me to sleep.
Yeah. Oh, God.
This is a rose. I love her so much. I was so grateful to play all of those games. I would play them 1,000 more times because I don't get enough time with her. And it was really, really lovely.
Oh, that is so sweet.
Let's go back in time. To
Let's
the
go.
60s.
Great transition.
Not. Okay, Brianna. Today I'm telling you my iconic 60s item is the lava lamp.
Yay! I had two lava lamps as a child.
Shut up.
I know.
I
don't know why I had two.
Because they're amazing.
I guess so. Yeah, maybe I already had one and then somebody gifted one to me. I don't know. But they're very cool.
Or you stole Carolyn's.
I don't think so. If anything, she would have stolen mine.
No, they're actually super cool.
Yeah.
And perfect for the 60s.
Tell me about them.
I will.
Sorry.
No, I want to tell you. They were invented by Edward Craven Walker in England in 1963.
Wow.
An English invention.
Groovy, baby.
Before we talk about the lava lamp, which is called something else in England and originally, just to give you an idea of what chill, spirited 60s man this is, Walker was part of a naturist camp, which
nice
is a nudist camp, if you are unfamiliar. And he also made nudist underwater films.
Okay.
So this is exactly the guy who you expect to think like, oh, yeah, this groovy, like, psychedelic lamp that morphs as you watch it is, like, what his thing is. I'm just kind of giving you a perspective of this dude.
Got it. I would expect nothing less.
For the 60s? Nah.
Yeah.
Here's how the lamp came to be. He was casually drinking in a Dorset pub when he noticed a homemade egg timer crafted from a cocktail shaker filled with bubbling liquid. He literally saw this just on, like, the back of a bar and was like, wait a minute, this is kind of cool the way the liquid is, like, moving around inside it. I don't really know how this egg timer worked, but it was a patented invention from someone. It wasn't just, like, something someone did for novelty.
Well, I'm trying to picture what this thing looked like. It was an egg timer? So just, like, a timer shaped like an egg, yeah.
It is an egg timer by purpose, not by...
Oh, not by shape, because they do make timers that are just shaped like eggs.
Yes.
Okay.
Not that.
Not that.
No, picture more...
So it was just a timer.
Yeah, picture more... It was just, like, telling time by science. Picture more of a, glass cocktail shaker.
Uh-huh.
filled with like a liquid. So you're seeing kind of like where he saw like this yeah. lava lamp.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not knowledgeable on this homemade egg timer. Anyway, he saw it and was like, whoa. Oh my God, it's groovy. Let me make one of those, but make it a light. So egg timer, but make it lava lamp. He asked British inventor David George Smith to help design and come up with the chemical formula. Smith is the inventor on the U.S. patent. There's kind of a complication here because all of the websites that the original lava lamp comes from that exist today have like histories, and mm-hmm. they don't mention this David George mm-hmm. Smith guy. They mm-hmm. only talk about Edward Craven Walker.
Mm-hmm.
But I had found on the U.S. patent mentions that this guy's the inventor, and he's a U.K. inventor, not like a U.S. inventor who did the U.S. version.
Right.
And also, there was one article posted that mentioned this guy. Everything else only mentions Edward Craven Walker. So take this with a grain of salt, but I feel like it should be mentioned that this guy who's at least on a patent of this thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Be mentioned as at least helping come up with the chemical formula for this. He used an orange squash bottle, which was a drink in the UK that many people hated, and a halogen light bulb as the heat source at the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then he put two insoluble liquids, one water and one wax-based, inside the bottle and let the heat make it work. So here's kind of the science behind it to explain how a mm-hmm. lava lamp works real quick. It's actually not that bad. It's pretty simple. This is from Smithsonian Magazine. A solvent, carbon tetrachloride, adds weight to the otherwise buoyant wax. The light bulb, aka the heat source, at the bottom of the lamp liquefies the wax. And as it expands, its density decreases and it rises to the top, where it then cools because it's far away from the light bulb mm-hmm. and falls back to the bottom. So you can see how this constant motion is working because the water is there just to be the like stagnant filler and give the wax the space to move through.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I had no idea it was wax.
Yeah, which kind of makes sense because it looks a little like the way it pulls is kind of solid.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of... I guess I never really thought about what exactly it was, but I definitely thought it was suspended in oil and not water because it moves kind of slowly, but it's water. Wow.
Yeah, it just moves slowly because the way the chemical formula is so precise, and it's a trade secret, that it is able to be like enough that it like only heats so much that it starts to float mm-hmm. and then cools enough that it immediately starts to fall. It's like a perfect combination of all those kind of things.
Wow.
Science. So the secret is what keeps that perfect combination moving, which is why, like, you know, they keep it a secret. Uh-huh. He packed it up and started the company Crestworth and sold it as the Astro Lamp in 1963. So, like, this is what kind of, you know, makes so much sense to me. And I always like this kind of thing, how, like, the lava lamp thrived because it was perfect for the age.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you picture what a lava lamp looks like, and it still looks like this today, it's like a metal, almost rocket-looking thing.
Yeah.
Which is perfect for the 60s because it was all about space age.
We were just talking about that.
We were just before. So it's like cool to see, you know, not only was this like psychedelic for like the drug side of the 60s, but also appealed to like the sciencey space age side of the 60s because it literally looks like a rocket. And that's why like it looks like that, because they wanted to appeal to that.
Yeah. You know, and age. Also 12-year-old girls in the early 2000s.
Who love space.
Who are just really great at science.
Well, I can't wait to talk about why it became popular in the 2000s again.
Tell me. I can't wait.
Okay. Oh, also another thing that kind of in the bubbling liquid looks alien-like. So that was another thing that kind of fit the, you know, the...
Yeah.
The...
Space.
The final frontier. And another thing, too, Walker had said that if you buy my lamp, you won't need drugs. So he knew what he was doing. This is why it took a little bit of time when he saw this egg timer to when he perfected the design, because mm-hmm. he knew that in order for this to sell, it needed to have all of these features in order for it to be like perfect. And then also, of course, the chemical combination taking time.
Yes.
So besides all these things, another thing that made it really popular was that it was photographed with celebrities like Ringo Starr.
Wow.
Yes. So that also kind of shot it into popularity.
Mm-hmm.
The astrolamps sadly went out of style in the 70s and the 80s. At the end of the 80s, the original company was manufacturing about 1,000 per year.
That's not very many.
Not many at all. Yeah. And Edward Craven Walker wanted to retire and sell the company. So he did to Cressida Granger and David Mully in 1989.
Wow. Cressida Granger.
It's very Harry Potter.
That's a very, yeah, very sci-fi fantasy name. Good for you, girl.
She knows what she wants. Give her that astro lamp. Turns out that this, like, passing of the torch of the astro lamp would be very good for Cressida Granger and David Mully, because the Austin Powers era in the 90s, it made it the lava lamp popular, or the astro lamp popular again.
Yeah.
So that's why in the year 2000, you know, it was popular among people, because not only because it was cool and it was a hip thing to do, but mm-hmm. it was actually sparked from Austin Powers.
Wow, the power. The power that Mike Myers wields.
Well, we know that Shrek was the first animated.
You know what? Now that we put these things together, Mike Myers was the king of the late 90s and early 2000s.
He was.
He really was. Wow. Our king. Get out of my swamp.
Okay. So during the year 2000, this was the amount of astrolamps sold, and that was 800,000. So
okay.
If you think about, you know, at the end of the 80s when it was only selling 1,000 a year, yeah. Here we're at 800,000.
Right, quite a jump.
The new company name under these two people was Mathmos. The U.S. during their time didn't see as, like, crazy dips as the astrolamp saw. They kind of sold millions throughout their entire span.
They were kind of just like really successful.
Really, for all you young girls, as Bree said.
Yeah.
And they started calling it the lava lamp, which is what we as U.S. natives know it as.
Yes.
Fun fact, the carbon tetrachloride that I mentioned earlier used in the wax was banned in the U.S. in 1970 because it was poisonous.
Oh, well, that's a good reason.
That colorful liquid, a lot of people want to drink it like it's a Tide Pod, okay?
Oh, God. People are always trying to drink things they're not supposed to drink.
Bless their soul.
They're going to need it.
Speaking of mistakes made by people, this is a sad story I'm about to share, and it'll maybe a little bit of a trigger warning. I don't know.
Oh, God.
A report was done by NBC News. A 24-year-old man in Washington placed a lava lamp on a hot stove and it exploded, sending shards of glass into his heart, and he died.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This event went viral at the time, and lots of articles were posted about it. And one of the, like, main things people put was, can you die from a lava lamp? So there was this new, like, ethos of lava lamps being a tiny bit dangerous. But it was literally this one guy, like, making one dumb decision.
Yeah. What year was this again, did you say?
I didn't, Brie, but it was 2004.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. So, you know, right around the time when you had had one.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that reference this entire time.
I base my life timeline off of when I did and didn't have a lava lamp.
Good, as you should.
Yeah.
But not for much longer, because I'm almost done. I only have one more little thing. Today, the lava lamp, it's a silly object. Today, the lava lamp, for a standard, you can buy them on our favorite website, Amazon, for $14 to $25.
Yeah, they've never done anything bad.
No. But the original lava lamp on Mathmos.com is 82 pounds, which is 116 USD.
That's expensive.
Right? For an original lava lamp from the original makers. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess people, you know, that's a thing. People want to pay more for, like, this is a real original thing.
Right. And if they've truly perfected the formula, it probably works well and fast. You know?
Yeah, one would hope.
One would hope, and I'm sure, like, the metal that they use for the spacey designs are, like, nickel.
Yeah, the highest of metals.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what... what an expensive metal is. I don't dabble in the building
silver,
arts.
Perhaps.
No, they wouldn't use silver. That is monetary value.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow. Thanks for that, Josh.
Yeah, just a silly little book report.
We love doing silly little book reports over here on this podcast.
Yeah, get
amazing.
With it.
Thanks. All right, Josh, I'm going to tell you about troll dolls.
Oh,
yay.
Relevant, always relevant.
Relevant, always relevant, as we will find out, sort of.
Molly loves the trolls.
Really?
Yeah.
Has she seen the new movie? World Tour.
Is that new? I thought it came out like last year.
Yeah, it did. It's the newest one of the Trolls franchise.
I mean, they push out these movies so fast that I was wondering if there was a new one I missed. But yes,
no.
She's definitely seen World Tour, yeah.
Wow, that's great. I've only seen the first one.
I've seen neither. Everybody!
Wow, fake fan.
I'm not a fan.
Okay, this is fine. Fair enough.
make me one.
I will. I'll tell you all about it.
Can't wait.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so the very first troll doll was made in 1959 by Thomas Dom, or Dam, we're not sure.
Either is lovely.
Either is good. I think the one that is like most correct is Dom, but anyways. He's from a small Danish town of Gjol. It's got that O with the slash through it, and every time I looked it up, nobody told me how it's pronounced. So
that's rude of them.
I don't know. That's fine. It's not the most important aspect of this story. So before the dolls were an international success, or before they even existed, Dom was working as a baker for a local shop. But in the economic uncertainty that followed World War II, the bakery wasn't doing very well, and it ended up closing. So Dom and his family were struggling to make ends meet, and he would often brainstorm potential work opportunities while he carved bits of wood. He often chose to carve funny faces or animals or like little dolls or creatures. And it was actually he was actually really good at it. So his wife encouraged him to try and sell the little figures that he created since no other work opportunities were presenting themselves. So Thomas Dom took his very smart wife's advice and he packed up a bunch of his dolls to take over to the closest city to attempt to sell them door to door. And when he came back home, he had sold every single one of them and found a customer base to boot. People began to commission work from him, and soon he became a full-time sculptor and toy maker. He was so well recognized that in 1956, a Swedish department store hired him to make them a large Santa Claus figurine for a window display, and he gladly accepted. Now, while he was working on the sculpture, he realized that it wasn't quite as eye-catching as he hoped it would be, so he decided to remedy the problem by surrounding his sculpted Santa Claus with little elves and trolls, and he installed them with springs from an old mattress so that they would move and bounce and bobble around inside of the display window and catch more people's eye. So the window did its job, and it brought tons of customers into the store, but they were asking to buy the dolls from the display. I know. So Dom began taking orders and sold out entirely before Christmas of that year. And in order to keep up with the huge demand that didn't stop after the Christmas season, he changed the design of his dolls slightly. He began to use a mold to make them out of rubber instead of wood, and he filled them with wood shavings, which we learned from the Pet Rock episode are called Excelsior. I just still find that fact so funny. Why does it have that name?
I don't know. It's not a brand name.
No, it's literally just like wood shavings are called Excelsior. Why?
Excelsior is an exclamation, right?
Isn't it?
It doesn't have another meaning.
I thought it was something with like King Arthur, like his sword was called Excelsior or something like that.
That's Excalibur.
Oh, Excalibur. Well, close enough. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyways.
Who cares?
They were filled with wood shavings.
It's hilarious.
He nixed the springs from his design, and then he sold the dolls under the name Good Luck Trolls through his new company, Damn Things. So he took his last name and like made a little joke. He also at one point had a troll design that was named the Damn It Doll, spelled like D-A-M-M-I-T. So it was also a play on his last name.
So it had to be pronounced Damn, not Dom.
I don't know. because he's Danish. He's from Denmark. And it's got the, like, it's pronounced differently. I don't know. When I looked it up, it was like the pronunciation is closer to Dom than Dam. But he used the, like, close
joke
spelling to make a joke. I don't know. Maybe it is okay. Dam. I don't know. Maybe I've been saying it wrong this whole time. Who knows? Not me. Okay. So he was doing so well that in 1959, he was able to open up a factory in his hometown, followed by several more in other countries. Dom, or Damn, let's call him Thomas. Thomas was selling more than 10,000 trolls in Denmark each year.
Wow.
They soon became one of the United States' biggest toy fads from the fall of 1963 to 1965. So much so that his dolls had sold over 1 million units in 1964 alone, all within the United States. That's not worldwide. That's only the United States and only 1964.
We're obsessed.
We were obsessed with trolls. It was a huge hit. We still are obsessed with trolls.
I'm obsessed with trolls. No, I'm not.
It's fine. You don't have to be. You're Molly obsessed is. With me. I'm a troll. Okay.
Nice.
So the original dolls were made from very high quality materials, including Icelandic sheep wool hair and glass eyes. But is that creepy to you?
I don't know why that's scary.
I don't think they were like scary glass eyes. They were just toy eyes made out of glass.
Okay.
Anyways, they were very popular amongst other people, but their widespread popularity, coupled with a loophole that existed within U.S. copyright laws, brought about a flood of copycat products and cheap imitations. So this explains why you'll often see troll dolls marketed under several different names and with, like, hugely varying styles. Like, they all have, like, the typical little, like, chubby body and, like, straight standing up hair, but they'll vary a little bit from company to company. And this was obviously a big loss to Thomas Dom because for like 30 years, other companies could rip off his product without any repercussions, all the way up until 1994, when the Uruguay Round Amendment Act was passed that basically gave international companies and individuals the rights back to their products and intellectual property that had previously been in the public domain.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
So it all happened because somehow, like, he had a patent in his home country, and then when one company in the U.S. was licensed to sell troll dolls, it, like, entered the public domain in the United States because that company was selling them, and then even though he got a U.S. patent in 1965, it was, like, the damage was already done somehow. I don't know. It was, like, a really weird issue that was happening with U.S. copyright law that they then amended, but still, it was, like, 30 years after the fact. So trolls have come and gone in popularity over the years, usually waxing and waning over the course of roughly like 10 years or so. So they were really popular in the 60s, but by the mid 70s had sort of lost their appeal. And then they saw another spike in popularity at the 1983 New York Toy Fair, about 20 years after their initial introduction. These dolls were marketed as Norfin troll dolls and were officially licensed by Dom Trolls. So the word Norfin comes from a mashup of Elfin, Orphan, Norway, and Finland. Even though Thomas Dom is from Denmark, it doesn't make any sense.
You do you, but I'm like, okay.
I don't know. That was the reasoning behind Norfin as the name.
I have etymology whiplash.
So that was the 80s, and then again, they kind of fell out of fashion for a little bit until the early 90s.
Yes!
when we were born.
Oh my god.
I know. There was a line of troll dolls called the Treasure Trolls that were released with their iconic rhinestone belly buttons marked as a lucky wish stone that you were meant to rub as you made a wish so that it would come true. I had one of those.
Did you rub its belly button?
I don't know. I feel like I remember them being sold as like, if you make a wish, it'll come true with your magic troll doll. But I don't remember. I was a kid. I know I definitely know I had one, though. It was also during the 90s that Hasbro released their own take on Trolls with the Battle Trolls. And these were meant to be marketed to young boys because apparently ugly troll dolls with wild hair is like a girl thing. I guess.
Oh my God.
I don't know. So they had to release Battle Trolls that were like super muscly troll dolls who had weapons. Cool. We love to see it.
We don't, but sure.
We don't at all. We don't at all. The 80s and 90s actually brought the most variation in troll dolls, including things like troll pencil toppers, conjoined twin troll dolls, celebrity yes. lookalikes, and more. I have a picture of the conjoined troll doll that I will put up on the Instagram.
Yes.
It's so weird.
I wasn't here before, but I am now.
So after the spike in the 90s, they really dropped off in popularity until the 2016 cult classic film Trolls was released.
A cultural reset.
A cultural reset. We are all Poppy.
Yeah.
So on April 11th, 2013, DreamWorks Animation announced that it had acquired the intellectual property for the Trolls franchise from the Dom family and Dom Things or Damn Things and became the exclusive worldwide licensor of the merchandise rights except for Scandinavia, where Damn Things remains the licensor.
Wow.
Yes. So
they
DreamWorks
must have given a lot of money for that.
I bet they did because it was like a hugely successful company.
Right. And to be like, yeah, I'm going to sign away all my rights to this to you. Must right. have been a hefty sum.
Right. Well, and it's interesting that they like kept the caveat of like, yeah, you can have international selling rights except for in Scandinavia because that's where we originated from. So like, I think that's great that they didn't give that up, you know?
Yeah. Pride thing.
Yeah. So DreamWorks released Trolls on November 4th, 2016. And the sequel, Trolls World Tour, was released just last year in March of 2020. So Hasbro now distributes the movie merchandise dolls, which have faces similar to original Trolls, but are updated to mimic the movie characters more, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they have softer plush bodies instead of the hard plastic that we know from our childhood.
Come on, plush bodies.
Plush bodies.
That's just me in quarantine.
It sounds like, I was going to say, it sounds like a gay club. Specifically for bears. Welcome to plush bodies.
That plush bodies actually rolls off the tongue really well.
It kind of does. Nobody take it. We're going to copyright it.
Plush bodies.
Plush bodies. come to our gay bar. Yeah. Opening July of 2022. Okay.
We can't afford Manhattan, so we're going upstate.
Oh my God. Okay. The Toy Industry Association included troll dolls in its Century of Toys list, which includes 100 of the most memorable and creative toys from the 20th century. So part of the reason that troll dolls sold so well is that there was sort of like a built-in lore. So we know trolls from like a bunch of different fairy tales, but specifically from Scandinavian mythology. And it was these myths that inspired the damn dolls in the first place. So trolls were known to have magic powers and live under bridges and guard castles, blah, 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 all these things. And they're sort of painted as like a bad character in myths and stories, you know. So you'd imagine that this sort of mythical creature would bring bad luck and not good luck. But the trolls have been described as having a, quote, alluring mix of harmlessness and horror. Dam's designs embraced this duality, exaggerating the trolls' features until they became adorable. They were so ugly that you couldn't help but laugh, Dom said. And when you laugh, luck follows you. So they became good luck charms and were sold as such.
Wow.
I know. The dolls in their heyday also seemed to channel the same sort of like psychedelic energy that was becoming so popular at the time of their release, just like what you were talking about with mm-hmm. like a toy or an object or something that is perfect for its time. So people sort of saw that in the troll dolls, that their neon colored hair and their like wrinkly, weird little faces were sort of like psychedelic and counterculture. Yes. And I guess they also mimicked some popular artwork of the time for like a specific, I think it was like a record cover art was had like similar artwork to it. So people were into it because of that. So it was definitely like a toy of the time, and it took off because it just sort of like fit within the era. And now to close us out, I have a couple of fun facts for you because we love fun facts.
I do love me some fun facts.
Yes. So Betty Miller, who was the first woman to fly across the Pacific Ocean alone, brought her Dammit Troll doll with her on her journey and then brought him with her again to meet President Kennedy after her flight. There's a picture of her with her doll and JFK. It's great.
So she totally, like, used that for luck.
She did, exactly. It's a good luck doll.
Yeah, got her across the Pacific.
It got her there in one piece.
Nice.
I know. In 2003, the Tarpon Springs, Florida Police Department purchased 5,000 trolls dressed as little tiny cops to give away to local kids. It was meant to build relationships with the kids and to encourage them to see police officers as approachable role models rather than, like, scary.
It's going well.
Yeah, we'll see. I haven't been down to Tarpon Springs, Florida in a while, but hopefully.
Anyway.
They're the one place on Earth that has, like, a positive relationship with their police force. And they're like, what do you guys attribute it to? It's the trolls.
Bless.
It's the good luck of the trolls. So the troll community has a thriving subculture of very serious collectors, similar to people who, like, obsess over Beanie Babies and collect thousands of Beanie Babies.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And this group includes an artist named Reverend Jen Miller, who turned her apartment in the Lower East Side of Manhattan into the Lower East Side Troll Museum, where visitors could schedule an appointment to see her collection until she was evicted in 2016.
That timing, too, is perfect because of the first movie coming out.
I know.
And her eviction.
I know. She still has her collection, though. I guess she put it in storage, and now she goes to pop-up exhibits to display her collection to people who want to see it. So she's doing okay. She's fine. There is also collector Sherry Groom, who's a retired psychiatric nurse and currently holds a Guinness World Record for her collection of 8,130 troll dolls.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Sherry also apparently sometimes goes by the name Sigrid and refers to herself as the Troll Queen. She claims
she should.
She is the troll queen. She claims to be a Holdra troll, which is a type of troll who can disguise themselves to appear human. I don't know if she actually believes that or if that's just something she does for, like, the tours that come through her museum. But if you are so inclined, you can visit her collection in Alliance, Ohio, where she and her husband run the Troll Hole, which is the name of the museum. It is a 2-story museum that displays all of her dolls in addition to 22,000 pieces of troll-related memorabilia.
On top of the 8,000 dolls.
On top of the 8,000 troll dolls. Oh, yeah. They mean business. They're in the troll business.
Okay.
And they're doing great down at the Troll Hole.
No.
And that's all I have for you, Josh.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
That was a nice little surprise. Trolls, man. Trolls. I love that now you've done trolls and Furbies.
Wow. I have a type, don't I?
You do. I'm ready for it.
You know, actually, I was considering doing Barbie for this episode, and then I was like, what feels more like me, Barbie or troll dolls? And the answer was obviously troll dolls. So here we
are.
I
love it. Yeah. Also, they're so relevant now, too, so.
They're so relevant. Barbie who? Nobody
I don't
knows
know her.
Barbie. Ugh.
No. Our promo still has the 1995 holiday, Happy Holidays,
Barbie. Oh, shoot, it does. I should have done Barbie. Oh, well. We'll probably.
Whatever. We're going to change that.
We've talked about so many dolls. We could have an entire episode about dolls that we haven't covered yet, actually. Because we talked about doing the American Girl doll episode.
I was just going to say, we had already mentioned the American Girl dolls because it would be so interesting.
Yeah, so actually, if you want to hear about Barbie and American Girl dolls, send us an email.
We already asked, and we got 0 emails.
I know. It's fine. We'll just continue asking. We'll be
you
like those people. Hi, we're calling to contact you about your car's extended warranty. And also, do you want to hear about American Girl dolls?
Text yes.
Yeah, to 1234567 89.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you.
No problem.
And thank you all so much for listening. If you have any theme suggestions for us, you can also send them over to thinkabobpodcast@gmail.com, our highly trafficked location. Or you can slide into our DMs on Instagram, which is much more frequented, at yes. thingamabobpodcast, or on Twitter at thingamabobpod. While you're there, give us a follow, and please subscribe to our show on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes charts and new and recommended page. And make sure to join us next week, where I sell Bree something she does not need.
You and everybody else.
She is highly influenced.
And thank you for joining us, because now we are all two things smarter.
Beat it up!